Darkcast Network. Out of the shadows comes the best of indie podcasts. Murdering five students in Gainesville, Florida, in the summer of 1990, Daniel Harold Rowling later confessed to raping several of his victims, committing a triple homicide in his home city of Shreveport, Louisiana, in an attempting to murder his father earlier that year. Tonight, we'll learn what led to these actions, and ultimately inspiring one of the most successful horror movie franchises in the United States. My name is DJ, and this is the Mythical True Crime Podcast. Danny Rowling was born in Shreveport, Louisiana. His father was a Shreveport police officer named James Rowling, who told Danny on many occasions that he was unwanted from birth. James also abused and beat Danny, Danny's mother, Claudia, and his brother, Kevin, for frivolous things such as breathing the wrong way or in a way that displeased him. In one incident, Danny's mother went to the hospital after claiming her husband had tried to cut her throat with a razor blade. She made repeated attempts to leave her husband, but always returned shortly. In one example of the senior Rowling's sense of discipline, he pinned Danny to the ground and handcuffed him, and had police take his son away because he was embarrassed by him. In another story, Danny had a dog, but James beat the dog so often that it died in Danny's arms. As a teenager and young adult, Rowling was arrested several times for robberies in Georgia and was caught spying on women as they got dressed. As an adult, he had trouble trying to assimilate into society and hold a steady job. At one point, Rowling was working as a waiter at the Poncho's restaurant in Bossier City, Louisiana. In August 1990, Rowling murdered five students, one student from Santa Fe College and four from the University of Florida, during a burglary and robbery spree in Gainesville, Florida, in which he mutilated his victims' bodies, decapitating one. He posed them, sometimes using mirrors. It all started in the early morning hours Friday, August 24th, when Rowling broke into an apartment shared by a 17-year-old university freshman named Sonia Larson and Christina Powell, finding Powell asleep on the downstairs couch. He stood over her briefly, but did not wake her up, choosing instead to explore the upstairs bedroom, where Larson was also asleep. Rowling murdered Larson, first taping her mouth shut and stifling her screams, and then stabbing her to death with a K-bar knife. She died trying to fend him off. Rowling then went downstairs, taped Powell's mouth shut, bound her wrists together, right behind her back, and threatened her with a knife as he cut her clothes off. He then raped her and forced her face down onto the floor, at which point he stabbed her five times in the back. Rowling then posed the bodies in sexually provocative positions. He then took a shower before leaving the apartment. A day later, on Saturday, August 25th, Rowling broke into an apartment of an 18-year-old, Krista Hoyt, prying open the sliding glass door with a screwdriver. Finding that she was not home, he instead waited in the living room for her to return. At 11 a.m., Hoyt entered her apartment, and Rowling surprised her from behind, placing her in a chokehold. After she had been subdued, he used duct tape to gag her mouth and bound her wrists together from behind her back, and led her into the bedroom, where he cut her clothes off and raped her. As in the Powell murder, he forced her to lie face down in the bed, and he stabbed her in the back, and this stab ruptured her aorta. He then flipped her over her body, sliced into her abdomen open from her pubic bone to the breastbone. After arriving back at his campsite, Rowling couldn't find his wallet. Thinking that maybe he had lost it at the murder scene, he returned, at which point he decapitated Hoyt, posed her body in a sitting position on the edge of her own bed, and placed her head on the shelf facing the corpse. He later claimed that his intent was to add shock to whomever discovered her. By this point, the murders had attracted widespread media attention. Many students had begun taking extra precautions, such as changing their daily routines, sleeping together in groups. Because the spree was happening so early in the fall semester, some students withdrew their enrollment entirely, or even transferred to other schools. Tracy Pauls, who was 23 years old, was living with her roommate, Manny Taboada, who was also 23 at the time. On Monday, August 27th, Rowling broke into their apartment by prying open their sliding glass door with the same tools he had used previously. Rowling found Taboada asleep on the bed in one of the bedrooms and killed him after a struggle. Hearing the commotion, Pauls went down the hall to Taboada's room and saw Rowling. She attempted to barricade herself in her room, but Rowling broke through the door. Rowling taped her mouth and her wrists, cut off her clothes, and raped her, before turning over and stabbing her 3 times in the back. Rowling then posed Paul's body, but he left Taboada's alone in the same position that which he had died in. With the exception of Taboada, all of the victims were petite, white brunettes with brown eyes, like Rowling's mother. Although law enforcement initially had very few leads, police did identify 2 suspects. One suspect was Edward Lewis Humphrey, a University of Florida student who had a history of mental illness and also bore numerous scars on his face from a car accident. Humphrey was arrested after a physical altercation with his grandmother and held in custody for 5 months, until a grand jury refused to indict him on the murder charges, citing insufficient evidence. Humphrey's photo was shown repeatedly by news outlets as if he was the true killer. Authorities then publicly cleared him of all charges after Rowling's arrest. The other suspect was also later cleared, and in my research I couldn't find any information on that other suspect. Louisiana police alerted Florida authorities on an unsolved triple murder in Shreveport in November 4, 1989. Detectives noted that there were similarities between the Gainesville murders and those of a 55-year-old Tom Grisham and his 24-year-old daughter, Julie, and his 8-year-old grandson, Sean. The family had been attacked in their home as they were preparing dinner. Afterwards, Julie Grisham's body had been mutilated, cleaned, and posed. Don Maines, an investigator on the case with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, traveled to the Shreveport area in November 1990 because of similarities between the murders committed in Gainesville and murders committed in Shreveport. There, including posing the victims, tape residue on the victim's body, and vinegar being the chemical of choice to clean the body, Maines said that he had tested the bodily fluids of the perpetrator in Shreveport and found that this person also had type B blood. He called the match to the evidence in Gainesville a revelation in the case. Shortly after Maine's trip to Shreveport, Shreveport resident named Cindy Yershin called Crime Stoppers and reported that Danny Rowling was possibly connected to the murders in both cities. 3 months earlier, that August 1990, Cindy had heard the news report that a string of murders as she traveled through the Florida Panhandle. The report made her think about Rowling, whom she had met at her Louisiana hometown church, and his possible link to the other Shreveport murders. Rowling had said deeply disturbing things to both her and her then-husband, Stephen Dobin. Quote, "He'd come over every night for a while, and then one night, Stephen came in, and he goes, 'He's gotta go,' Cindy said. She also said that Dobin told her that Rowling had told him he had a problem. Quote, I said, what kind of problem? Cindy said. And Stephen told her, he likes to stick knives into people. Cindy said she dismissed these comments when she heard about them because she didn't want to believe that Rowling had been possibly responsible for the murders in Shreveport. Rowling had also told her, quote, one day, I'm going to leave this town, and I'm going to go where these girls are beautiful, and I could just lay in the sun and watch beautiful women all day. News of the Gainesville murders haunted Cindy, so she finally contacted police that November, based on her hunch about Rowling's connection to the murders in both cities. It would not let me rest, she said. One day, I just picked up the phone, I called Crime Stoppers, and I said, I think there's this one guy y'all need to investigate. Danny Rowling. Investigators responded to the tip, quickly found Rowling, who had been arrested on September 7th in 1990, for an Ocala, Florida supermarket robbery. The robbery had committed 10 days after the bodies of Pauls and Tobalata were found. Rowling had been held in the Marin County Jail, 40 miles south of Gainesville. Investigators determined that Rowling had type B blood, like the suspect in both Gainesville and Shreveport murders. Once Florida investigators realized that Rowling had multiple convictions for armed robbery, they realized that they could actually be responsible for the bank robbery that had occurred on the day Krista Hoyt's body was found. They returned to the evidence locker, where the gun, screwdriver, bag of money, and cassette player had all been stored, and they listened to the tapes. They also found tools matching marks left in the Gainesville murder scenes. The small camp where he had been living in the wooded area near the apartment complexes frequented by the students. Investigators discovered audio diaries that he had made, there alluding to the crimes. Later, it was discovered on August 5th, 1990, that Rowling broke into the home of Janet Frank in Sarasota, Florida. She was bound and gagged with duct tape, and he sexually assaulted her, but he did not kill her. After this quick message, we'll be right back. If this is your first time tuning in, I encourage you to subscribe to the show so you can hear all the other episodes, as well as what we have coming up in the next few weeks. In November 1991, Rowling was charged with 5 counts of murder. He was brought to trial nearly 4 years after the murders that he committed, and he claimed his motive was to become a superstar, like Ted Bundy. In 1994, before his trial could go underway, Rowling unexpectedly pleaded guilty to all charges. Subsequently, state attorney Rod Smith presented a penalty phase for the prosecution. During his trial, Court TV conducted an interview with Rowling's mother in her home, during which his father could be heard shouting off camera. On April 20th, 1994, Rowling was sentenced to death. But also, Rowling was diagnosed with several disorders, including antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, and paraphilia. Now, I'd like to take a brief moment to go over some of these disorders with you. In case you haven't heard, multiple personality disorders, antisocial personality disorders, and the like are all personality disorders characterized by long-term patterns of those who have disregard or a violation of the rights of others, as well as a difficulty sustaining long-term relationships. Lack of empathy and contemptuousness attitudes are often apparent, as well as the history of rule-breaking that could sometimes include law-breaking, tendency towards chronic boredom or substance abuse, and impulsive and aggressive behavior. Now, antisocial behaviors are often an onset before the age of 8. In nearly 80% of cases, the subject will develop their first symptoms by age 11. The prevalence of these symptoms peaked around ages of 24 to 44 years old, and are often decreased in people of ages 45 to 64. In the United States, the rate of antisocial personality disorders in the general population is estimated between 0.5 and 3.5%. In a study of random samplings of 320 newly incarcerated offenders, found that antipersonality disorder was present in over 35% of those surveyed. One out of every 17 divorces also involve a person affected by antisocial personality disorder. Now, borderline personality disorder, or BPD, is also known as emotionally unstable personality disorder, which is a disorder characterized by long-term patterns of intense and unstable interpersonal relationships, a distorted sense of self, and very strong emotional reactions. Those affected often engage in self-harm and other dangerous behaviors, often due to their difficulty with returning their emotional level to a healthy or normal baseline. They may also struggle with the feeling of emptiness, a fear of abandonment, and detachment from reality. Symptoms of borderline personality disorder sometimes are triggered by events considered normal to others. Typically, the disorder begins with early adulthood and occurs in various situations, such as substance abuse disorders, depression, and even eating disorders are commonly associated with borderline personality. 8 to 10% of people affected by this disorder also may die by suicide. The disorder is often stigmatized in the media and the psychiatric field, and as a result, is often going undiagnosed. Causes of borderline personality disorder are actually unclear, but seem to involve genetic, neurological, environmental, or even social factors. It occurs about 5 times more often in a person that's who's been affected by a close relative. Adverse life events also appear to have played a role in borderline personality disorders. And the underlying mechanism often appears to involve the network of neurons inside the brain. Now, in Rowling's case, he was diagnosed with all of those. Antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, and paraphilia. Now, shortly before he was executed in Florida, he sat on death row in the Florida State Penitentiary. Rowling wrote songs and poems and even drew pictures. His works are an example of murderabilia, which is, I guess you can say, a fan term identifying collectibles relating to murderers, homicides, or perpetrators of other violent crime. While he was sitting on death row, besides the songs and the music he was writing, Rowling claimed responsibility for the Shreveport murders, handing in to a spiritual advisor, Reverend Mike Hudspeth, and the Florida police a handwritten confession and an apology. Rowling had a last meal of lobster tail. He sang a gospel hymn, but made no statement immediately before his execution, which was witnessed by many of his victims' relatives. Rowling was executed by lethal injection at Florida State Prison on October 25, 2006, after the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a last-ditch appeal. He was pronounced dead at 6:13 Eastern Time. Rowling had been the subject of several written works. His crime spree inspired the screenplay by Kevin Williamson, who penned the script for the 1996 slasher film Scream, which led into one of the world's most popular horror franchises. Rowling was also the subject of an episode of the show Body of Evidence from the Case Files, a court TV show which explained in the episode of a forensic factor, which originally aired on Discovery Channel and rebroadcast on the Science Channel. Now, before we end tonight's episode, I'm going to leave you with the reading of Rowling's note that he had written while on death row. "I know that sorrow, that heartfelt bane, that droth mortal flame, stone pon stone thath final throw, etched hitherto thy captive soul. Danny Rowling. In order to fulfill all things, that no stone be unturned, hereby I make a formal written statement concerning the murders of Julie, Tom, and Sean Grisham in my hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana. Hal Carter, Julie Grisham's former fiancé, is 100% innocent, totally pure of that crime. I, and I alone, am guilty. It was my hand that took those precious lights out of this old dark world. With all my heart and soul, would I could bring them back. Being a native son of Shreveport, I can only offer this confession of deep felt remorse over the loss of such fine, outstanding souls. Have wept an ocean of tears, by which mournful doth float on sea of regret. Danny Rowling. That sounds so eerie, it gives a chill down your spine. Speaking of chills, on January 14th, 2022, Discovery Plus actually premiered a paranormal documentary titled Scream, The True Story, in which the stars of the show conduct a paranormal investigation in Rowling's childhood home of Shreveport, Louisiana. Makes you think, was there something paranormal that drove Rowling to commit those crimes? Something other than in this world tell him to do those things? Or was he a product of his environment? So much psychological and physical abuse and torment. Not only that, seeing those around him going through similar, possibly even worse abuse. Maybe that's the true reason why he did it. Now, Ted Bundy, who he wanted to idolize and be, killed university sorority girls' roommates in Florida as well. So maybe he was hitting kind of close to home and emulating his hero. And with that, that concludes tonight's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Be sure to write me about how you liked this episode. Also, if you'd like to follow me on my social media, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. There you can interact with all the other folks that listen to my podcast, and even with me. There you can suggest new story ideas or communicate with the community at large. I post regularly and often. On Instagram, you can click my link in the bio, which leads you to my subscriber page. I have Patreon, but I also have Buzzsprout subscriptions. Both of them help me monetarily to keep this show going. For as little as a cup of coffee, you too can help contribute to the show and help me with the work that I'm doing. Also, if you liked tonight's episode, please consider subscribing so you could listen to all the previous episodes. If tonight's episode wasn't quite your cup of tea, there could be a story out there that involves the paranormal that you can listen to. Have a good rest of the night. Thank you for listening to the Mythical True Crime Podcast. My name is DJ. Good night. Thank you very much for listening tonight and being part of the Mythical True Crime community, hosted by me, DJ. Subscribe to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to get your weekly updates. And if you like what you hear, consider subscribing. Subscribing will directly support the show and the work that I'm doing. If you'd like to be a new supporter, consider clicking the link in the description box below. For less than a cup of coffee a month, you can help me continue to make great content for listeners everywhere. No commitment, cancel anytime. This has been the Mythical True Crime Podcast. My name is DJ. Good night.